Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. Today, we're going to be tackling a topic that's gaining a lot of traction. It's called Alternative Dispute Resolution, or ADR. Basically, it's all about settling legal disagreements outside the traditional courtroom, like, you know, kind of moving away from that whole court battle thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's really changing the way we think about resolving conflict, shifting the focus from, you know, fighting it out in court to really trying to find more cooperative and flexible solutions.
So it's more like a friendly fencing match than an all-out war. And to help us navigate this world, we're tapping into some insights from a leading organization, the American Arbitration Association International Center for Dispute Resolution. We're going to call them the AAAICDR from now on. They put together this really great resource. It's full of answers to top questions that even law firms have about ADR.
That's a great point. I mean, the fact that even law firms are going to the AAAICDR for guidance, it really shows you just how mainstream ADR is becoming. It's not just this, you know, fringe movement anymore. It's like a serious contender in the legal landscape.
Okay, so let's unpack this. One thing that really jumped out at me was the speed of arbitration. Like, we're talking resolutions in under a year sometimes, while court battles can drag on for ages. Have you seen this firsthand?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a case recently, a contract dispute. This thing would have taken at least 2 years to resolve in court. We went through arbitration. We were able to reach a settlement in just 6 months. I mean, that's a huge amount of time saved.
That's incredible. Talk about cutting through the red tape. So faster resolutions, less stress. What's not to love?
Right. I mean, there are some nuances to consider, of course. Mm-hmm. But overall, the speed advantage is a major draw for a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure. Now let's dig into another key aspect, choosing your arbitrator. I was surprised to learn that there's more flexibility here than you might think.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people assume it's this really rigid process, but the AAAICDR highlights options beyond the traditional method. You know, they'll list strike and rank.
So it's not like picking from a preset menu. There are other ways to go about it.
Exactly. Imagine you and another party have a disagreement. You could actually agree on an arbitrator beforehand, someone you both trust and respect. This pre-selection process can really save a lot of time and hassle.
Oh, so it's kind of like choosing a referee that you both know will be fair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you don't have someone specific in mind, the AAAICDR actually has this thing called the Arbitrator Search Platform. It's a database of qualified professionals. You can search by their expertise, experience, or other criteria. Find the best fit for your case.
So you have control over who's making the decisions in your dispute. That's a level of empowerment you don't always get in a traditional courtroom setting. But before we get too deep into the specifics of arbitration, maybe we should take a step back and talk about another dispute resolution method, mediation.
Absolutely. Mediation is another powerful tool in the ADR toolbox. It's a process where a neutral third party helps facilitate communication, helps the parties try to reach a mutually agreeable solution.
Now, you mentioned discovery earlier, and I think it would be helpful to clarify what exactly that means for our listeners, you know, for those who might not be familiar with the legal jargon.
Sure. Discovery is essentially the fact-finding phase of a legal case, where each side gathers evidence to support their claims. Could involve requesting documents, taking depositions, interviewing witnesses.
Okay, so it's like the investigative stage. You're building your case. How does that work in ADR, particularly in arbitration?
Well, in arbitration, the discovery process tends to be much more streamlined. Compared to traditional litigation, it's often more focused and less adversarial, which can save a lot of time and money.
So less time digging through mountains of paperwork and more time focusing on finding a solution.
Exactly. And because the parties are generally more cooperative in arbitration, they're often more willing to share information voluntarily, which can further streamline the process.
That makes sense. So in arbitration, it's less about trying to outmaneuver each other and more about working together to reach a fair outcome. Now, you also mentioned mediation earlier. Where does that fit into the arbitration picture?
Well, sometimes you have what's called MedArb, where mediation is actually the first step. And if that doesn't fully resolve the dispute, then the parties move on to arbitration.
Interesting. So they try to find common ground first before going for a binding decision.
Exactly. Imagine you and your neighbor disagree about a property line. With MedArb, you'd first sit down with a mediator to try and compromise. If you hit a roadblock, then you could have an arbitrator make a binding decision.
I like that. It keeps the door open for collaboration while still having a backup plan if you can't quite reach an agreement on your own. But let's say mediation isn't part of the plan. How does the speed of arbitration actually compare to traditional court proceedings?
Well, arbitration cases are typically completed within 9 to 12 months. which is significantly faster than the, you know, years it can take in court.
Wow, that's a big difference. What contributes to that speed? Is it just the streamlined discovery we talked about?
That's a big part of it. But there are other factors too. In arbitration, there's generally more flexibility in scheduling hearings and just managing the overall timeline. There are also fewer procedural hurdles and less opportunity for delays, which keeps things moving at a faster pace.
Okay, so we're talking about a process that's really designed for efficiency. And getting to the heart of the matter quickly, that's certainly appealing, especially for businesses that need to resolve disputes and move on. Now let's talk about the elephant in the room, the cost. How much does it actually cost to hire an arbitrator?
That's a great question, and it's one we hear a lot. Arbitrator fees can vary. It depends on factors like experience and the complexity of the case. Kind of like buying a car. You know, you got your economy models and then you have your luxury options. But unlike buying a car, you really want to make sure you're getting a good deal for your money here.
That's a great analogy. So give us a ballpark figure. What kind of price range are we talking about?
So for simpler cases, hourly rates for arbitrators can range from $300 to $600. But for really complex commercial disputes, you could be looking at $800 an hour or even more.
Okay, so there's quite a range there. But how can I, as someone going through this process, be sure I'm getting a qualified arbitrator who's worth that cost? What kind of vetting process is in place?
Well, the AAA ICDR has a rigorous vetting process for its arbitrators. It's not just anyone who can walk in and say, hey, I want to be an arbitrator. First off, you need extensive experience, usually at least 15 years in the field.
That makes sense. You want someone who knows what they're doing. What else?
You need strong recommendations from other professionals. People who can vouch for your skills and your integrity. It's not enough to just show up. You need a solid reputation. Plus, the AAA ICDR conducts thorough background checks, make sure there are no red flags. And it doesn't stop there. Before you can even be considered for a case, you have to undergo mandatory training.
Wow, so it's like a multi-step process to even get in the door. What about staying up to date? Are there ongoing requirements for arbitrators?
Absolutely. To remain on the AAA ICDR roster, arbitrators have ongoing training requirements.
Yeah.
And they undergo regular performance evaluations. It's all about ensuring the quality and the impartiality of the arbitrators.
That's reassuring to know. So you're not just paying for experience. You're paying for someone who's constantly honing their skills and being held accountable for their decisions.
Exactly. And it's that commitment to quality that makes ADR such a compelling alternative to the often unpredictable and drawn-out process of traditional litigation.
So we've talked about the who and the how much in ADR. Now let's look at the where. The institutions that oversee these proceedings. You mentioned a key distinction earlier. Nonprofit versus private ADR institutions. What's the big difference for someone trying to choose between them?
Yeah, that's an important thing to think about. When you're deciding, you know, where to go for ADR services, nonprofits like the AAA ICDR, they have a fundamentally different mission from private for-profit organizations.
So for nonprofits, it's not just about the bottom line.
Exactly. Transparency is a major priority for them. They really work hard to make sure their fees and processes are clear and accessible to everyone.
That makes sense. Levels the playing field a bit, no matter who's involved.
Right. And another key difference is how they develop their rules and procedures. Nonprofits really emphasize user feedback. They're accountable to the people actually using their services, not to shareholders who are just looking for, you know, maximum profit.
So they're more likely to adapt and evolve based on what's working, what's not, and what people are asking for.
Absolutely. Now, with private institutions, it's not that they're bad or anything.
Yeah.
But their profit motive can sometimes influence how they operate and the types of services they offer. It's just essential to understand those potential differences when you're making your choice.
It's like anything else. You want to do your research, make sure you're comfortable with the organization you're trusting to handle your dispute. Now let's shift gears a bit and talk about these things called arbitration agreements. Pretty crucial documents, right? What should people be paying close attention to?
They are absolutely crucial. Arbitration agreements are basically contracts. They set the ground rules for how the entire process will play out, and they're legally binding, so you really want to make sure you understand exactly what you're agreeing to before you sign.
So it's not just a casual handshake agreement then?
No, not at all. These are serious documents with real legal weight.
Okay, so what are some red flags or key elements to look for when you're reviewing an arbitration agreement?
One of the most critical is the scope of the agreement. What types of disputes are actually covered by this thing? Is it for any and all disagreements? Or is it more limited, focusing on specific types of claims?
Right, you don't want to be surprised down the road by finding out that you know something isn't included.
Exactly. Another key element is how the arbitrator will be chosen. Does the agreement specify that? Will it be a single arbitrator or a panel of experts?
That makes sense given our earlier conversation about different selection methods. You want to make sure you have a say in who's making those decisions.
Right. And you also want to look at which rules will actually govern the arbitration process. Will it be the AAA ICDR rules or some other set of guidelines? This can have a big impact on how the case unfolds.
Okay, so we've got scope arbitrator selection and the rules governing the process. Anything else we should be watching out for?
Yeah, the location of the arbitration is important, especially if you're dealing with parties in different states or countries. This can significantly affect travel costs and just the overall logistics of the process.
So it's not just about finding a neutral location. It's about practicality, making sure everyone can participate without too much burden.
Exactly. And then there are things like the language of the arbitration, how costs will be allocated, and the specific provisions regarding confidentiality.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack in these agreements. It seems like having an attorney review any arbitration agreement before signing is crucial.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. It's always best to seek legal advice. Make sure you fully understand the implications and protect your interests.
Solid advice. Now, you've been very clear that ADR isn't a one-size-fits-all solution. What are some situations where it might not be the best approach? Any red flags to watch out for?
Yeah, there are definitely situations where ADR might not be ideal, despite all its advantages. For example, if there's a significant power imbalance between the parties, arbitration might not be the fairest option.
So if one side has a lot more resources or leverage than the other, it could kind of tilt the scales unfairly.
Exactly. The less powerful party might find themselves at a disadvantage.
That makes sense. It's about ensuring a level playing field, which is something ADR is often praised for. But that fairness can be compromised if one side is at a disadvantage from the start. What other scenarios might raise concerns?
Well, if the dispute is about setting important legal precedents, you know, precedents that could affect a wider group of people, traditional litigation at a court of law might be a better route.
So if it's a case that could have far-reaching implications beyond just the immediate parties involved.
Right. Court decisions, they have the power to establish those legal precedents.
Mm-hmm.
Precedents that apply to future cases. They really shape the legal landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Arbitration decisions, on the other hand, are generally binding only on the parties involved in that specific dispute.
That's a crucial distinction. So ADR might not be the best fit for cases that could shape the interpretation of the law or impact a broader community. Are there any other situations where we might want to proceed with caution when considering ADR?
If you anticipate a very complex discovery process involving tons of documents and numerous witnesses, traditional litigation might be a better fit. As we talked about, discovery and arbitration tends to be more streamlined, less extensive.
So while that streamlined approach is a benefit in many cases, it might not be sufficient for highly complex cases where you know unearthing a mountain of evidence is critical.
Precisely. And another factor to consider is enforcement. While arbitration awards can be enforced by the courts, it does require that additional step. If you need the immediate backing of the court's authority to ensure compliance, traditional litigation might be a more straightforward option.
It's like having the full force of the legal system behind you right from the start, rather than having to go back to court for enforcement later.
Exactly. So while ADR offers many advantages, it's crucial to weigh those benefits against the potential drawbacks. Really consider the specifics of your situation before jumping in.
It's about choosing the right tool for the job, right? Recognizing that ADR is a powerful tool, but it might not be the right tool for every situation.
Absolutely.
But even with those caveats, it sounds like ADR is still a valuable option for resolving disputes in a more efficient and often less adversarial manner.
Absolutely. It offers a lot of benefits in terms of speed, cost effectiveness, flexibility, and privacy.
Mm.
And as we've discussed, there are different types of ADR, so you can really tailor the approach to your specific needs.
Right. It's about finding the right fit for the circumstances. And that's why it's so crucial to be informed and to seek expert guidance when considering ADR options.
I couldn't agree more. Having a knowledgeable attorney by your side can make all the difference in navigating the complexities of ADR and ensuring the best possible outcome for your situation.
Now, before we move on, you mentioned earlier that the legal landscape is constantly changing and ADR is no exception. Can you elaborate on that a bit? What are some of the trends on the horizon in this field?
Oh, we're seeing some really exciting developments. One of the most significant is the rise of online dispute resolution, or ODR for short. Basically, it's using technology to make dispute resolution more accessible and efficient.
ODR. That sounds futuristic. Can you paint a picture of what that looks like in practice?
Sure. Think of it as using online platforms for mediation, arbitration, or even just negotiation. Instead of meeting face-to-face, the parties can communicate and exchange information virtually.
So a virtual courtroom of sorts? That's fascinating.
Exactly, and it offers a lot of advantages. For example, it can be extremely helpful for international disputes. Or for cases where the parties are located far apart, it removes those geographical barriers.
That makes a lot of sense in today's globalized world, where businesses and individuals are interacting across borders more than ever.
Absolutely. And ODR can also make ADR more accessible and affordable for people who might not have the resources for traditional in-person proceedings.
So it's leveling the playing field in terms of access to justice.
Exactly.
Are there any other notable trends shaping the future of ADR?
We're seeing a growing emphasis on early dispute resolution, trying to resolve conflicts before they escalate into these full-blown legal battles.
That sounds incredibly sensible. Prevention is always better than cure, right?
Yeah.
But how does that work practically?
Well, one common technique is to include what are called dispute resolution clauses in contracts. These clauses require the parties to attempt mediation or some other form of ADR before they go running to court.
I love that. It's like building a safety valve into the agreement to prevent things from exploding.
Exactly. It's about creating a structured path for addressing disagreements before they become entrenched and adversarial.
Are there any other trends you're seeing in the ADR space?
Another interesting trend is the increasing use of hybrid approaches to ADR, combining elements of different techniques to create a more customized process.
So instead of being limited to just arbitration or mediation, you can kind of blend them together.
Exactly. You might start with mediation to see if you can reach a mutually agreeable solution. And that doesn't work, move to arbitration for a binding decision. Or you might have an arbitrator issue a preliminary ruling on certain issues, followed by mediation to address the remaining sticking points.
It's like having a tailor-made suit for your dispute resolution needs, using the best elements of each approach to craft the most effective process.
That's a great way to put it. It's about being flexible and creative and finding solutions that work best for the specific circumstances.
So we've got technology driving innovation with ODR, a focus on early intervention to prevent those disputes from escalating, and a move towards these hybrid approaches to create more customized solutions. Sounds like the field of ADR is constantly evolving, adapting to the changing needs of the modern world.
It absolutely is, and that's what makes it such a fascinating and dynamic area of law.
I completely agree. It's been an incredibly insightful conversation, shedding light on a topic that, while increasingly relevant, is often shrouded in mystery for those outside the legal world.
It's been my pleasure sharing these insights.
Now, before we move on to the final part of our deep dive, I'd like to touch on one more important aspect of ADR, the complexities of resolving disputes that cross international borders.
Yes. International arbitration is a whole other level of complexity, but also incredibly relevant in today's interconnected global economy.
Exactly. So what are some key things to keep in mind when you're dealing with disputes that involve parties from different countries? What makes this different from the domestic ADR we've been discussing?
Well, the biggest difference is that you have to navigate these diverse legal systems and cultural norms that might be at play. It's not as simple as just applying the same rules and procedures that you would domestically.
So it's a much more intricate landscape.
Precisely. For example, you need to consider the enforceability of arbitration agreements in different countries. What's binding in one country might not hold the same weight in another.
That's a crucial point. What good is an agreement if it can't be enforced where it matters?
Exactly. You also need to determine which country's laws will actually govern the arbitration. This choice can have a big impact on the outcome of the case.
So it's not just about finding a neutral location for the arbitration, but also about understanding the legal framework that will govern the process.
Exactly. And then there are practical considerations, like time zones, travel costs for participants, even finding qualified arbitrators who have expertise in both international disputes and the specific subject matter of the case.
It sounds like international arbitration requires a specialized skill set and a deep understanding of global legal systems and cultural nuances.
Absolutely. It's not something to be approached lightly. But for companies and individuals doing business internationally, it can be an absolutely essential tool for resolving disputes effectively and fairly.
So for those who find themselves navigating these complexities of a cross-border dispute, what are some key things to look for when choosing an institution to handle their international arbitration?
The most crucial factor is finding an institution that has a strong reputation for neutrality and expertise in international disputes. Not all institutions are created equal in this regard. You want an organization that is respected globally for its fairness and impartiality.
So it's about finding an institution that can inspire confidence in all parties.
Exactly. You also want to make sure the institution has a clear and well-established set of rules and procedures, specifically designed for handling international arbitrations.
So a transparent framework is in place to ensure a fair and predictable process for everyone.
Precisely. And another important factor is the institution's track record in terms of the enforceability of its awards in different countries. You want an institution whose decisions carry weight and can be upheld in courts around the world.
That goes back to our earlier point about the importance of enforceability. It's critical to have confidence that the outcome of the arbitration will be recognized and upheld internationally.
Exactly. Choosing the right institution is absolutely crucial for a successful international arbitration. You want an organization that understands those nuances of cross-border disputes, has a reputation for neutrality and expertise, and can issue decisions that are enforceable globally.
It sounds like navigating the world of international arbitration is complex, but incredibly important.
Absolutely. And as more and more businesses and individuals operate across borders, the demand for effective international dispute resolution mechanisms will only continue to grow.
I think we've given our listeners a lot to consider in this segment. Any final thoughts on international arbitration before we move on?
If you're facing a cross-border dispute, don't try to go it alone. Seek guidance from experienced attorneys and institutions specializing in international arbitration. They can help you navigate those complexities and protect your interests effectively.
Solid advice. It's always better to have expert support when dealing with these matters, especially when you're dealing with international laws and jurisdictions. Welcome back to our deep dive into ADR. We've explored the what, the why, and the how. From selecting an arbitrator to navigating those tricky international disputes, now it's time to bring it all to life with some real-world examples. I'm curious to see how this plays out in different industries.
You know, what's fascinating is ADR has really gone beyond just the legal world. It's being used across a wide range of industries, everything from entertainment to construction to technology.
That's what I love about this topic. It touches so many different aspects of modern life. Speaking of things near and dear to my heart, let's start with entertainment. I was surprised to learn that ADR is frequently used to resolve disputes in the film and music industries. It seems counterintuitive given how much we hear about lawsuits in Hollywood.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how often ADR is used behind the scenes in the entertainment world.
Mm-hmm.
You got to think about it. Entertainment contracts are notoriously complex. They involve things like intellectual property rights, royalties, creative control. And when conflicts arise going straight to court, it can lead to these messy public battles, which can be really detrimental to everyone involved.
It's all about protecting reputations and those future collaborations, right?
Exactly. ADR offers a much more discreet and efficient way to handle these sensitive situations. For example, mediation can be incredibly effective in helping artists, producers, studios find common ground when there are creative differences or when they're negotiating those tricky contract terms.
So instead of duking it out in court, they can sit down with a neutral third party and try to hammer out a deal that works for everyone.
Right. It keeps the focus on finding a solution rather than, you know, scoring points or assigning blame. And then arbitration is often used to resolve disputes involving things like copyright infringement or breach of contract.
So it allows for a binding decision without having to air all the dirty laundry in public.
Exactly. It allows the parties to maintain control over the narrative and avoid the potentially damaging fallout of a very public court battle.
Okay, so ADR is a valuable tool in the entertainment industry. What about other sectors? Where else is it making a big impact?
Construction is another industry where ADR has become really important. Construction projects are inherently complex. Multiple stakeholders, tight deadlines, unforeseen challenges popping up all the time.
And when those challenges turn into disputes, the costs can quickly spiral out of control, right?
Absolutely. Delays cost, overruns disagreements over materials or workmanship. These things can really derail a project and lead to costly litigation. That's why ADR has become such a valuable tool in this industry. It's often seen as a proactive way to manage disagreements, keep projects moving, and avoid those big financial pitfalls.
So how does ADR actually work in the construction world?
Well, mediation, for example, can be used to resolve disputes between contractors, subcontractors, or even the project owner. Common issues include disagreements over payment schedules, unexpected delays, or concerns about the quality of work.
So it's about finding ways to keep things moving forward without getting bogged down in those lengthy and expensive legal battles.
Exactly. It keeps those lines of communication open and encourages that collaboration, which is really crucial in any construction project. And then for larger disputes like claims for breach of contract or significant construction defects, arbitration often comes into play.
Because you need that neutral expert, someone who understands construction law and can make a binding decision.
Precisely. And because arbitration is generally faster and less expensive than going to court, it can help minimize the financial damage of these disputes and allow everyone to move on more quickly.
It's about finding practical solutions, solutions that make sense for the realities of the construction industry, where time really is money. And keeping those projects on track is super important. So we've seen how ADR is making waves in entertainment and construction. Now let's look ahead. What's on the horizon for dispute resolution? Any exciting new trends popping up?
One of the most significant trends we're seeing is the growing role of technology. Online dispute resolution, or ODR, is gaining traction. And it has the potential to really change how we resolve conflicts.
We touched on ODR earlier, but I'd love to dive in a little deeper. Can you give us a clearer picture of what this looks like in practice?
Sure. Imagine a virtual platform where parties can engage in mediation, arbitration, or even just negotiation, all online. Instead of physically meeting in a room, everything takes place digitally. It makes it more accessible and convenient for everyone.
So breaking down geographical barriers and time constraints.
Exactly. ODR is particularly beneficial for international disputes, where travel costs and logistical hurdles can be really significant. It also allows individuals and businesses to resolve disputes from the comfort of their own offices or homes.
So ODR is making dispute resolution more user-friendly.
Right.
Are there any other advancements within ODR that we should be aware of?
Oh, yeah. We're seeing these increasingly sophisticated ODR platforms now. They incorporate artificial intelligence to guide the process. AI can help analyze case information, identify key issues, even suggest potential solutions. Makes the whole process smoother and more efficient.
AI mediating disputes. That's incredible. Sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie.
I know. It's happening. And it's just the beginning. As AI technology continues to evolve, we can expect even more innovative applications in dispute resolution.
So we've got technology pushing the boundaries with ODR, but are there any other trends shaping the future of ADR beyond the digital realm?
Absolutely. There's a growing focus on early dispute resolution, which aims to address conflicts proactively before they escalate into full-blown legal battles.
That makes a lot of sense. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? How does this proactive approach actually work?
One common strategy is to include dispute resolution clauses in contracts. These clauses require parties to at least try mediation or some other form of ADR before they resort to litigation.
It's like building that safety net into the agreement, encouraging early intervention and collaboration.
Exactly.
And another trend we're seeing is the rise of hybrid approaches to ADR, blending elements of different techniques to create a more customized process.
Right. There's no one-size-fits-all solution. You might start with mediation, and if that doesn't work, move to arbitration. Or have an arbitrator make a preliminary ruling, followed by mediation to address the remaining issues.
It's about being flexible and finding the right combination of tools to fit the specific needs of the dispute. So we've got technology changing things with ODR, a focus on early intervention, and a trend towards these hybrid approaches. It's a really exciting time to be involved in this field.
It absolutely is. The future of ADR is bright, filled with innovation and a commitment to finding better ways to resolve conflict.
It's been a fantastic journey exploring this world of ADR with you. Thanks for sharing your insights.
My pleasure.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you've learned something about the power of ADR. Until next time, remember, conflict doesn't have to be a battle. There are other paths to resolution, and ADR just might be the one for you.